Sharp Facets Gallery, and yes, I'm Ann Eller, and yes, I'm here with Ed Taylor. Ed, of course, is running for State House District Number 14, and of course, that is part of Greenwood. So how are you doing today, Ed Taylor?
I'm doing quite well. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. Now, you have basically spent your life in education.
Yes. Of the last 41 years, I've been a full-time educator.
Absolutely. Now, just tell me exactly, when you were growing up, what did you think you wanted to be?
Wow.
Wow, I know. I always get people with that question.
I guess I wanted to be a cowboy at one point, and I had an interest in being a pilot. You know, a lot of things I didn't give a lot of thought to.
Yeah.
But.
Well, what made you want to go to the Citadel?
Well, I just felt like that would be something different that nobody else, none of my friends had gone. A young man came and talked to us about Citadel my junior year in high school, and it just seemed pretty cool. I didn't know much about it. I showed up down there pretty naive.
And signed on the line, and the rest is history, right? Pretty much.
that first night, I remember staying up all night long thinking, what in the world have I done to myself? But it's a good place, and there are a lot of good people that are finished there, so I'm proud of the fact that I finished.
Absolutely. But now, of course, you are from Clinton, correct?
Yes.
Right? And grew up there, I guess?
I did. My mother was a school teacher. My dad was a mail carrier, so I went to public school in Clinton, graduated in 1967, went on down to the Citadel.
So how did you get into education? You I don't think you usually think of kids that go to the Citadel as ending up in education, do you?
Well, it's probably one of the smaller majors, and we don't train elementary teachers at the Citadel, but you could be a high school teacher. I started out as a math major, changed to business, really didn't know what I wanted to do, was considering going into the Air Force. Education allowed me to take some courses that I wanted to take. I was interested in psychology and sociology. So I just changed majors, and when I graduated, there was de-escalation in the war in Vietnam. I decided not to take a commission, and figured I'd just try education for a couple of years and see if I liked it, and I just stayed in it because I did like it, and I think it makes a difference in the world.
Well, you just kind of answered my question. So education, so your passion for the education is the fact that it makes a difference. What else made it a great career for you?
Well, I remember as a high school principal, that was one of my favorite jobs, seeing ninth graders come in, some of them kind of cocky, some of them pretty young and naive, and they just became real human beings, grown-ups by the time they were seniors, and I just loved the association with them. So that was a really special time for me. And being superintendent, I liked solving problems. You know, I changed jobs several times, because I thought I could do the job better than the person above me, or at least wanted to do some things differently. And becoming a superintendent was special to me. I didn't try to move around a lot. A lot of people move every 4 or 5 years in different superintendencies. But I was 15 years in Lawrence. And we passed a referendum. We built school, added a lot of classrooms. We put in a Montessori program that's still second to none in South Carolina.
I understand you're a big proponent of Montessori schools.
Yes, I am. I'm a big supporter. We had the very first program in public schools in South Carolina in Turbyville, where I was superintendent first. And then Lawrence was the second, and we very quickly became the largest. A lot of school districts around the state have come to Lawrence to get trained, including Greenwood. We had a good association with Lander and with the Self Foundation. They helped fund a lot of our initial costs. So we have a good partnership there, and I think we've done a lot of good. The very first class of Montessori as preschoolers graduated from high school the year that I retired from Lawrence. That was pretty special for me to go out with them. But of those kids that entered ninth grade from Montessori, 100% of them graduated from high school. 100% graduation rate is pretty special in any environment, so, and particularly in a public school. So we feel very good about that. They continue to be very successful all over the state.
What makes the Montessori program so special?
Well, that's a hard question, and I haven't answered that one in a while. But one thing, I think it's important that people choose it. I think it's important that it's like a home environment. It teaches more than just academic education. teacher's responsibility. Kids teach each other lessons. They get very involved. The parents get very involved. It's just a more broad educational program than normal academic education is.
So, question. I know that you think, you believe, you want to talk about the fact that we need to make sure that we're educating all our young people across the board and to get them on that third grade reading level all together. Would a Montessori program solve it?
I don't know that Montessori will solve it for everybody. I mentioned earlier to you as we were talking that I did my dissertation on schools of choice, and I think people need to make some choices about education. For those people that buy into the Montessori concept, yes, I think it could succeed with at least 99% of them. There may be some people that wouldn't. I mean, you know, they don't. We try not to have any plastic furniture, for instance. It's all natural furniture in a Montessori class. And there's some things that some folks might think are just off the wall and didn't want to buy into. But for those people that do buy into it, I think it would help. Yes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right. So now you also have had high school library and media center was named for you.
I thought that was pretty special, yes.
That is pretty special.
I think reading is what sets people apart. And if we can get kids reading early on, then it's going to change their lives. And people that read all the way through life are generally pretty successful. And I'm very happy to be associated with any media center, yes.
That's right. So, and of course, what made you decide to run for office? I mean, you retired, and then you went back, or you were in Gaffney as a interim superintendent for a while, is that right?
That's correct. I retired in 2009, and retirement's fun. I mean, my wife and I traveled. We went to the Holy Land. We drove across country, had a good time. Had an opportunity to go to Gaffney. It was supposed to only be for 10 months, and they asked me to stay longer, so I did. I loved being a superintendent. I mean, it's just a fun job for me. You get to make a lot of decisions, and you know, I don't have any problem at all doing that, and felt good about it. But I saw Gaffney, I saw Lawrence, and a lot of other school districts suffering big time because of lack of support from our state legislature. And I tried to talk some of my friends in the past into running, and so I felt like, you know, if it's good for them, it should be good for me. So I just hope I can make a difference and, you know, be a voice for children in Columbia.
All right. Well, we are here with Ed Taylor. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking about education. We're going to be talking about some of the other issues that he's passionate about, too. So why not stay right with us right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. By the way, if you've got a question or a comment, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Back here at Sharp Facets Gallery this afternoon. Ed Taylor, part of Greenwood is part of your district. Now, what exactly part of the district are we talking about, Ed?
It's a corridor of a mile or two on the Greenwood side of Lake Greenwood.
Okay.
And a good portion of Lawrence County beyond that. But it looks to be about, you know, a couple miles wide. So all the lake property pretty much all the way around the lake is in District 14.
Absolutely. So that's a good district to have. And, of course, that is district number, State House District. You're running for the State House. How's the campaign gone so far?
I think it's gone pretty well. It's been fun. You know, we've met a lot of people, been a lot of places. Every time two or three people are gathered, we try to show up. So, you know, it kind of takes away your life.
Right.
I'm ready
takes
to,
over your life.
Yeah, I'm ready to get it back, you know, to do a couple other things, but it's been fine. You know, 3 weeks, one side of me says, boy, 3 weeks, we've got so much left to do. And another side says, 3 weeks, and it'll be over one way or the other.
It'll be an answer. Well, now, as far as education, you believe that education is, that is your passion. That is what you wanted to, that is what you're actually running on. What? How do you feel that as far as money, though, because it does seem like money is the issue of everything that we try to do, whether it's in education or other things, what is it, what monies do we need? What are the things we need to concentrate that you feel on the education side?
Well, I think that if we followed the EFA, the Equal Finance Act that was passed in 1977, we funded at the level that our own state law says that we should, we'd be in a heck of a lot better shape than we are now. That there probably needs to be some adjustments to that law. You know, some things like poverty we know now are an issue and they weren't addressed. You know, it weights students and picks out students that at certain age levels it costs more to educate. It, you know, talks about the relative wealth of different communities, and, you know, you get more state money if you have less local money. So that needs to be looked at. And I think, like I said, if we funded at that level right now, we'd be in pretty good shape. Obviously, there's never enough money, and the more that you have, the more you could do. And a lot of people say,
isn't that what's wrong with the federal government?
Oh, I think the federal government's terrible. And my card, which I'll show you.
You didn't give me a card.
I call myself a conservative Democrat. You know, I am very conservative. I don't think we should ever spend money we don't have. I think that's crazy. So you got to raise it in order to be able to spend it, and we shouldn't go in the hole. I don't like the idea that China is going to own the United States pretty soon if we don't do something differently, and I think it's horrible that you know, that folks in Washington just keep letting this happen. I think they don't want to take a hard line because they don't want to get reelected, and we need to have people elected that they care more about their constituents and what they're supposed to be doing than whether they keep office. And you know, I'm 62 years old now. I'll be 63 by the time I take office if I win. I will not be a career politician. It would be an awfully short career if it was. So, you know, I don't think we were ever designed, our government was ever designed for people to go to the state capitol or U.S. capitol and stay for your whole life. I mean, I think it's a time that after people have had a career established and they go for a few years and do their part, and they go back home. You know, I hear people talk about, well, you know, the longer you're there, the more power you have. Well, what good does that power do that you have individually when you start talking about what's supposed to happen for your constituents? I know I got off target, but money is it's certainly important.
Sure, and, you know, I think one of the issues is, should the federal government be making the mandates and be providing the money, or is it a state issue that should be handled on a statewide and then really in the local school districts? Which way do you believe education should come from?
Well, I think there should be requirements, you know, at a national level, certainly.
From the federal level.
But I do think that when you have local control, it makes a big difference, too. I think that there's a lot of decisions you can make on a local level that the state or the federal government doesn't need to be involved in.
But how do you make those distinctions?
Well, I mean, I guess the people that pay get to make the rules.
People that pay get to make the rules, okay?
I mean, you know, it's just that's just the way life is. I mean, I might not agree with some things that go on when I pay my federal taxes, but I pay them or I go to jail. At the state level, I might not agree with some things, but, I mean, you pretty much have to do it unless you can go out and change it. And, you know, that's one of the things maybe I could do is change some things, or at least bring some things to people's attention that need to be changed.
What do you think is important that should be coming from the federal level? What type of things should be coming from the federal level?
Well, IDEA is one of the big deals that we have to function under in public schools, and you know that's the protection of special ed students. That there are federal laws now. Whether or not it should happen that way, I don't know that I can determine, but it does, and it dictates a lot of money that we spend. It would be nice if people's rules you can pay for it. There's some students, special ed students, and like I said, I'm not arguing with this at all because certainly these people need to be taken care of, that cost $50,000 a year to take to serve in public schools. And some people will question a student that has a 50 IQ and is unable to ever sit up, you know, should they be in public schools? But that's not our determination. Somebody else decided that, so we have to do it. And federal government, the federal laws dictate what kind of services that we provide, and they don't provide the money for that. So, you know, if in fact those kind of things are going to be determined at a federal level, then perhaps that funding should come at that point. And other mandates that come at the state level, it would be nice if those could be funded.
What about the program Race for the Top? Race to the Top, I guess it was.
I think it was a pretty good program. I think South Carolina was in line to get the money, and Dr. Zase decided he didn't want it, so he turned it away. And maybe if it's his household and he decides he didn't want to take a handout from somebody, he's willing to tighten belt and go on. That's one thing. But for him to turn down millions of dollars that could have helped children because of his own values, I have a hard time with that. You know, I think we all have a responsibility for the people that we're serving. And even if you philosophically think we shouldn't have gotten it, you know, maybe just another few hundred students would have graduated from high school at some point and become productive members of society, and they didn't because of his value system. I don't think he should have taken that tact, and I really don't like the fact that he had the right to make that decision.
Wasn't part of the problem, though, with the money is it was only for so long, a year or 2 years, and then wouldn't we have a problem? Isn't that the problem with a lot of the federal government programs that come down? Afterwards, you, the state government, has to figure out how to pay for it if they accept the money to begin with.
Well, in this case, we wouldn't have had to add programs. We're just talking about paying for things we were paying for before, and we got so many state cuts that we were in trouble and had to reduce class sizes. We had to lay off a lot of teachers that maybe wouldn't have to lay off, and perhaps the money would have been replaced. I mean, that's, if you go out and buy a lottery ticket and win $40 million, you could say, well, I'm just going to give that back because I won't have that next year. Well, I don't know how many people would do that.
Some people have gone out and done good things with it and not kept any of it, but that's not the issue. That is, that I think that's a little different. I think a lottery ticket would be a little bit different now, don't you, Ed?
And it's a little different, but I mean, to say that we're not going to take this money because we won't have it next year doesn't mean that you can't do a lot of good with it the year that you have it.
Okay, but let's take teacher salaries. I mean, that was one of the issues I know that was up in front of the Congress, the state here in South Carolina. Teacher salaries. If you go ahead and accepted the money, and then next year, where does the money come from to keep the teacher salaries at those rates?
Well, and one of the things that I disagree with what the legislature has done this year, there's a $1.2 billion surplus in South Carolina, and yet we let school districts and many other things go unfunded this year. For whatever reason, I don't know. But a $10 million jump would have been pretty easy to absorb in that respect. Teachers hadn't gotten a raise, 4 years? And they have been furloughed, many of them reduced by thousands of dollars. 2% raise, which doesn't come anywhere close to the inflation factor that they've missed out on the last 5 years, is really not that big a deal. And I think it was a big morale booster. And I don't think $10 billion in the total scheme of a multi-billion dollar budget is going to be that hard to absorb.
Okay. Well, I mean, these are the issues, though, that I understand as far as people asking questions. Take the money, don't take the money, where is it going to go? But from the federal issue, don't you agree that once you are beholden to the federal government, then your issues have to be, then you have to perform or you have to do what the federal government wants you to do?
We have to do it anyway. Federal government sets so many rules we have to follow that, it wasn't a matter of us doing something differently. It's just whether or not they're going to help pay for it. I don't know of any regulations that we got out of because we turned it down.
Well, I don't know about that. We can talk about that a little bit after the break. Maybe somebody can tell us whether there were some. I was under the impression there were. Other things that we're going to be talking about with Ed Taylor, he is running for House District Seat Number 14. He is here with us till 5 o'clock today, and we're going to be talking about some of the other things. What are some of the other issues you want to talk about this afternoon? We want to talk some more about education, but what else is important to the state of South Carolina and to the part of the district that you represent?
Well, I'm very concerned about environment. I think we have to take a look at environmental issues. We need to make sure that we protect that which we have and that we preserve it for our grandchildren and those that come after us. I think that we seriously need to look at tax reform in South Carolina.
I've talked to a lot of legislatures about that. That's coming next year, Ann.
It's been coming next year for a long time.
Exactly.
It's a hot topic, and I think that a lot of people don't want to touch it because it might affect their reelection bid. And that's one of the other issues, as you know, we talked about earlier. I think it should always be more important to do the right thing than to do what you have to do to get reelected.
Absolutely. All right, we are here with Ed Taylor. We are going to hear South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. I certainly hope you're going to stay right with us. And again, if you have a question, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at attractive prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. Yes, I am talking with Ed Taylor, who is running for South Carolina House District Number 14. He bills himself as a conservative Democrat who is very interested in education for all children, comprehensive tax reform, and preservation of South Carolina natural resources. Now, Ed, I wanted to ask you, in District 14, which covers a large part of Lawrence County and then part of Greenwood, does it cover any other counties?
No.
Oh, okay. What do you feel is the most important issue to cover for Lawrence County? Let's just use Lawrence County as far as an area. What do we need? What needs to be done for your constituents there?
I think that we need good-paying jobs available close to home. You know, there's a tremendous number of our population, I think it's in the 70 percentile that leave Lawrence County to go to work every day. It would be nice if they could work and be productive in their own communities.
Any type of businesses that would suit Lawrence?
Well, I think any kind of industry would be good. I do think, as I mentioned earlier, that we need to take a serious look at the education level. Mills were a big part of Lawrence County and Greenwood County and this part of the state for a long time. And there were some really good, hardworking people that could be very successful with elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that doesn't exist anymore. You know, McDonald's and Hardee's, they probably need people that are at least high school graduates, and there just aren't any other jobs that people can have. And so you got hardworking people or people that are very capable that don't have any place to go. We need to concentrate on adult ed to some degree. I think our tech schools are very good. Piedmont Tech is excellent, and it provides a service to both Greenwood and to Lawrence County. We need to encourage and get people into those programs. It'd be nice if some of our local industries could encourage people to go back to school. We all have a tendency to want to achieve that which gives us the short-term rewards. But if we're going to look in the long-term and we want to do what's good for the community, do what's good for people, we will retrain them and we'll get them ready for better jobs that might come to us in the future.
Well, I mean, I think that is one of the issues. We always talk about jobs, and then, of course, we talk about incentives to make companies come to an area. And is Lawrence into incentivizing bringing business in there?
Yes, we do. They have an economic development program is quite good in Lawrence County. I was actually on that board for 1 year, and I was very involved in the chamber for several years, including being chairman of the board 1 year. I think they do a great job. I do think that we have to be careful overall that we don't bargain with fee and lieu to the point that we bargain away any chance of creating revenue to pay to bring those people into the county. So it would be nice if at the state level we could look at our corporate tax, you know, perhaps drop that, get things a little bit better in balance so that we could be a good place for all corporations to operate. You know, people that are here now, and I'll get my feelings hurt if you cut a deal for a competitor of mine, and I've been in the business for 30 years just to get somebody else here. I mean, why would you rather have them than me? So I do think we have to keep things in balance, and I think it's fine to, you know, to cut some short-term deals, but to not require anybody to pay property taxes for 20 years might be a stretch, because you don't know where we're going to be in that time, and if in fact the new corporation doesn't pay any of those taxes to build roads, to put in sewer systems and so forth, who's going to pay for them? You and I are going to pay for them with our own property taxes, and as I said earlier, nobody really likes to pay taxes. So it all just needs to stay in balance. We don't need to make any quick decisions. We need to always review where we are. I do think we need comprehensive tax reform. So
should we have not given the advantage to Amazon?
I'm not sure about that one. I think that I could argue both sides. You know, Amazon's a big deal, but you know, when you start talking about a corporation that large not paying taxes, you know, not having to pay sales tax, why does anybody have to pay sales tax? Well, because we have to collect something, because we have to have some monies for the common good. It's good to have Amazon in town, I mean, in the state, and perhaps I would have supported the same legislation. But, again, if I was competing with Amazon with a retail business and people are going to buy from them instead of from me and I'm having to collect tax, I might be a little angry about that.
In spite of the fact that they did not have a storefront. They do not have a storefront. They don't actually sell right there at Amazon. It's simply a warehouse, a depot, which really would bring you into the question of what about national sales tax not national sales tax, but online sales tax. This is going to become a big issue as we move forward. You know, the problem with all of our governments, whether it's state or federal, they're all looking for money.
Yep.
What do you think about the sales tax for online purchases?
I think it's got to come. I mean, unless we're going to put everybody out of business in South Carolina, because everybody in South Carolina is going to buy from somewhere else, and our only customer is going to be people buying from out of state, so they don't have to pay sales tax. If nobody says pay sales tax, then I guess we have to up the income tax rate, because money's got to come from somewhere again, because being able to tax yourself for the common good is a sign of an enlightened society. So as much as we all hate taxes, we're going to have to collect them from somebody, somewhere, somehow. So I do think that if sales tax is going to continue to be a big part of our revenue, and it is right now, it's a very large part, then it's only fair that we start figuring out a way to collect it. And whether or not it's a national problem or a state problem, we're all supposed to be paying taxes ourselves and reporting everything, but I don't know how many people actually do that.
There's another issue right there. I think the thing about online sales tax is the issue is that taxation without representation. That's the issue that has been raised on that. How can you collect sales tax from this one to that one all across the nation?
Well, are you asking how would you physically do it, or
no,
is it
no,
fair to collect
about,
it?
No, just about the issue of collecting sales tax on all online purchases.
Well, you know, if a company is in South Carolina, then they're going to charge sales tax, and you're going to pay it because they are bound by law to collect it. Somewhere else, they're not. I do think if sales tax is something we're going to depend upon, then we should all pay that sales tax for all like purchases. Otherwise, we just need to throw it all out and find another way to raise our revenue.
Okay. All right. Well, we are here with Ed Taylor. We're talking about sales tax. We're talking about how to raise dollars. You know, I think having spent a lot of time talking to a lot of our legislatures and knowing several of them that are on the budget committees and this type of thing, it really is a tough thing to try to figure out how to put the money where it can do the most for the whole state. That really is a terrible job to have to try to figure out how to put the money, because everybody needs the money. You saw what happened with the budget when the arts, when they said they weren't going to finance, or when Governor Haley struck it out of the arts, and then it was put back in. So it is a very difficult issue to try to balance the budget and pay for the things that are needed.
I agree. And if we had 10 times as much money, there would be places that it could be spent. And that's just life. I mean, if you take folks that have a $1 million annual income versus somebody that has $20,000 annual income, pretty much they both spend all of their money. So we do have to figure out what the most important things are. One of my mentors years ago, and people that work for me have heard this thousands of times probably, you can't spend a dollar but once. So you have to make sure you spend it wisely, because once it's gone, you can't spend it again. And you do have to prioritize and decide the most important things. And I think, you know, basic needs obviously come first. As we look to the future, however, I do think that education is what's going to make the difference on whether or not we succeed as a community or not. There's big issues in South Carolina about private school versus public school, and I'm not opposed to private schools as long as they're quality. As I said, I did a lot of studying on schools of choice. However, the masses of South Carolina and the masses of this country are not going to get educated in private schools. They're going to get educated in public schools. And if we don't have quality public schools, we don't pay for quality public schools, we're going to have a hard time competing with the rest of the world. And we are in a world economy now. We can't just say, Lawrence is going to compete against Greenwood. And, you know, there's a little bit of that still going on. But people are sending jobs all over the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we are here with Ed Taylor. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we will be right back.
Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Rock and roll.
All right, you're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Ed Taylor. He was raised in Clinton. He was a superintendent of schools. He's been in education for over 40 years, and he's decided to put his name in the hat. He is running for South Carolina House District Number 14. So, Ed, you know, as we're getting close to the top of the hour here, we've talked a little bit about education, how you go about putting the dollars in the pocket here. I'm not sure we've been able to answer that question. I know that everybody would like to have good education, but to me, one of the biggest problems is not maybe it's the education, but part of it starts at home. And isn't that one of the issues that really is part of this whole picture?
If we could legislate that every child had two parents at home, I'd be all in favor of it. But that's just not going to work. I mean, we live in a different world now, and so I think to blame it on the fact that that has changed doesn't help anybody. We've got to adapt, and we've got to figure out how we're going to succeed with the population that we presently have.
Okay. But that still is an issue that you deal with there. It's not all the same. It's not. We don't have all the same type of kids coming into kindergarten or first grade.
We don't. We have some that are very well prepared to go to first grade without ever going to kindergarten. We have 4-year-old programs, 5-year-old programs now, and many people are talking about if we had the funds, it would be great to have 3-year-old programs. You know, the earlier that we get them, the more likely they are to succeed because of those differences in the homes. If I can talk about my own family for a moment, we have two small grandchildren. I have a granddaughter that's in Columbia, it's a little older, but we determined because of research that we'd read earlier that they were going to have 1,000 books a year read to them from the time they were born. My daughter has done a great job with that, and they far exceed that. And it's really not that big a deal if you think that little kids' books may only take you 5 minutes to read. But every night, I mean, that's really important to them. They don't want to go to bed until they've had 3 books read to them. And if every household could be like that, our jobs as educators would be much, much easier. There's no doubt, you know, that that the fact that that doesn't happen causes a lot of headaches in teachers. But
it also makes it hard for the class as a whole when you're dealing with kids at all different levels.
It makes it more important that you have some intervention programs. And I would love for us to, you know, have things available to kids. You know, if you had 2 or 3 breaks during the year, a week or 2 or 3, and could intervene and help those kids that need it the most so they could be more likely to be caught up, that would be great. You know, where that's been experimented with, it works very well. Have a modified school calendar and, you know, go to school 9 weeks, take a 2-week break, and let the people that need to stay in school, and the ones that don't can have 2 weeks off and go vacation and so forth. All that takes money. And as we said earlier, we certainly have a shortage of that.
We haven't answered that issue here yet. All right. Well, you know, I know one of the other things that you were interested in, though, is the ethics that has been happening there down in South in the House down there. What do you have to say about ethics and whatnot?
You know, I think we have some really nitpicking rules that don't make much sense, and the big stuff is getting ignored. We have a rule, for instance, that you can't collect more than $1,000 from any individual for anything less than a statewide race. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I wish I had somebody to write me a check for $20,000 and I could end my fundraising, but, you know, that shouldn't be, and it's not. However, there is a gentleman, I guess he's a gentleman, a New York billionaire named Howard Rich that owns 32 corporations, and he can give up to $32,000 to an individual by giving them to his corporations, and he has done that for many, many people in South Carolina. I think that is unethical. Maybe it's not illegal, but it certainly goes against the spirit of the law. This person who seems to be very interested in education and promoting things like tax credits and tax reform tried to do this in Colorado through a referendum, spent millions of dollars there, and it failed. Well, he decided to come here, and he's just buying legislators. I mean,
what is his objective?
It seems to be to dismantle our public school system.
To what?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I can speculate that it's in order to have a segregated system again. You know, that the haves versus the have-nots would be separated. Now, whether or not that equals to race, I'm not sure, but I don't like it. I mean, I didn't like it. The idea that anybody thinks that we're so cheap we can be bought, and that just seems to be that's what's happening. As I said, I really just think that's unethical. It goes against our way our government's supposed to be determined. I mean, I don't like the fact that you're more likely to get elected if you spend a lot of money. I mean, I've learned a lot from this, and you know, it makes it so that if you have an exhaustive amount of money, you can just about be anything in this country. That's wrong. I mean, we should be electing the people that are going to do the best job and try to serve the people that they're working for. But, again, I think money talks, and I guess there's nothing we can do about that. Maybe that's the free enterprise system. I didn't realize it went into politics as heavy as it does, but it does get you elected if you have the funds.
Absolutely. But is this man bad? Does he become a constituent of the person that he has given the money to? And has he given money to all the legislators?
Nope. He's given money to people that agree to do his bidding. And it has primarily been Republicans in South Carolina. I mentioned you earlier before we started talking, I probably voted Republican 20 years ago and passed that more than I did Democratic. I've always been an independent and wanted to vote for the best person. But here lately, our Republicans have gotten very, very conservative, ultra-conservative, to the point of, I think, going too far. And I do think that it's wrong that any one person can have as much influence as he does. And even if it was something that I agreed with, I think philosophically I'd still be opposed to the idea that votes can be bought. I really think that's what's happening.
And do you believe your opponent has taken money from this person?
I know that he has, yes. During the last cycle, he did take funds from some of the corporations that were owned by Howard Rich.
Howard Rich, okay. And so we're almost to the top of the hour here. You feel that you're the best choice for this job?
I do. I don't have any ulterior motives. I would like to make this community and this state a better place to live. I would like to make a better environment for children. I would like for South Carolina to be more productive. I would like for us to clean up some things that we need to clean up in the environment. And I would really like to be a champion for children. So, yes.
Where does it come from? Where do these things come from? From individuals or from government? Where do all these things have to come from? It sounds like a great idealistic.
Yeah, I am a bit of a Pollyanna sometimes, but I think if you don't have ideals, you won't ever achieve anything. So you've just got to go for what you think is the best, and then sometimes you settle for something less than that, but if you're not striving for something that you think is wonderful, then you won't get anywhere close to it.
But again, where does it come from? From the government or should it come from individuals and from business and churches and all these other groups?
Well, I think everything goes down to individuals, but individuals get together and form a church. They form a, you know, community action groups. They form the government. So it starts certainly at the individual level. People have to aspire to want to help themselves and want to help their fellow man.
So, again, should it come from the government? Are you saying that we should do these things through the funnel of the government, or should they be things that are done in individual communities by the community? For example, here in Greenwood, we have a soup kitchen, we have a food bank, we have all kinds of ways to help those in need. What do you feel?
I think those things are great, and I really admire those people that volunteer. There's just a lot of needs, and I think that some of them can be met by individuals, can be met by small groups and communities. I think that some of our needs are great enough that they need to be met by the government, yes. And I think that we should elect officials at the state, at the local, at the national level that will make wise decisions in the interest of our government, of each individual.
Okay. All right. So we are here with Ed Taylor. I'm going to give you 2 minutes here now, Ed, to just wind it up and tell us why people should vote for you.
Well, I grew up in Lawrence County, not far from where we are right now. I left for a few years, 23 years, and I was in the lower part of the state. I came back, and I am dedicated to staying here. I would have no reason to want to go anywhere else. Little travel's fine. My grandchildren, two of them are living here, and I would like for the environment to be as best that it can be, and I really think that I can help to move us in that direction. As I said, there are a lot of things that are important to me. Education is number one. I do think the environment is something that I would like to work on. We have some beautiful beaches. We have beautiful resources, trees. Everything about South Carolina is really nice. And yet I see us destroying some things. I hate it when I ride down the roads now and see how much litter we have on the roads. I mean, it's just terrible that some folks don't seem to care, and they throw things out the windows. And we as a government, and I know that's one of the problems we need to fix, don't seem to be interested in picking up that trash.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Ed. Sorry.
Okay. things like disposable bags that we get at stores. You know, we all seem to be willing to take 25 or 30 of those, and yet millions of marine life die each year because of grocery bags. Now, how hard would it be for us to figure out a way to either put a tax on those bags or make a real encouragement for people to use reusable bags? I mean, just some little things that wouldn't cost a lot of money would just make our quality of life much better and would, in fact, preserve our environment for the future.
Absolutely. All right. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery this afternoon. Ed Taylor has been our very special guest for the South Carolina House District 14. We will be posting his interview as a podcast on our website today, and we should have the video up tomorrow. We are out of time, so Ed Taylor, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, and I enjoyed it.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.